Good morning. It's good to see everybody out. I noticed that as I was looking at last year's bulletin, that this edition of the bulletin would have been, was Dad's last bulletin that he had done. So, and we're kind of at that. That'll be something for Earl to fix. We're at that 1 year mark, and somehow that does not seem possible, and in other ways it seems like it's been an eternity in other ways too. Several years ago, I watched a special on PBS that was talking about the events that led up to the Battle of the Bulge during World War II. And it was in the autumn of 1944. Germany had been driven back behind its borders. The Nazi war machine was in tatters, and the repeated bombings of the Allies had all but finally assured Hitler's forces that they would never rise again. And around the perimeter of Germany's borders, the Allies spread a thin line of forces. One person observed that the Allied forces were so thinly scattered that a man could slip between the lines without ever being observed. And all across Europe, great celebrations began. There were parties and dances and speeches, all rejoicing in Germany's defeat. The war was effectively over. But the problem was that nobody had told Germany. And even as its forces were being shattered and driven back, Hitler was devising a plan for one last onslaught. Underground factories began churning out more weapons, armaments, and ammunition. More of Germany's young and old men were conscripted and trained for war. And as Europe rejoiced, Hitler plotted. And his goal was not necessarily to drive the Allies into the sea, as much as it was to divide the British to the north and the Americans to the south. That way it would so demoralize them that they would eventually sue for peace on Hitler's terms. And thousands of men died because somebody forgot to tell the enemy that the war was over. Someone forgot that the enemy still lived and that the war wasn't completely over. What Paul is telling us here in Ephesians is that our enemy still lives, that the war is not completely over, and that we had better not let our guard down, that we must put on the whole armor of God and prepare for battle. And why we do that is because the enemy is just waiting for the chance to take you out. And just look again here in Ephesians 6, what Paul tells us about Satan. Verse 11 tells us to put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Verse 12 goes on to say that we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places. Therefore, we take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in this evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. And he goes on there in verse 16 to tell us in all circumstances to take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one. What this is telling us is that the devil is still seeking to destroy us, seeking to pierce our souls with those flaming arrows of hatred. And a day of evil will come knocking on all of our doors at some point, threatening to demoralize our faith. In addition to that, in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, it tells us that we have to be careful not to give Satan a foothold in our lives. In 2 Timothy, Paul informs us that there are certain people that have been taken captive that will do the will of the devil. Jesus warns the church in Smyrna in Revelations 2:10 to not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. And Peter tells us that Christians need to be sober-minded, to be watchful, that your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. And there are some people, including some who claim to be Christians, that don't believe that the devil exists. And they have the right to be wrong, but they are still wrong. The Bible tells us that Satan does exist, even if it's not in a physical form that we can see. One man observed that sicknesses are tied to viruses and bacteria. We can't see them, but we know they're there because the doctor advises us and tells us how to respond. And that's the same way with Satan. We can't see him, but God assures us that he is there and that he is a formidable enemy. The very idea of Satan is a scary concept. And so some people just pretend that he doesn't exist. Others simply choose to ignore him. They live as if this dark lord doesn't exist. In a time of war, one of the worst mistakes anyone can make is to underestimate the enemy. And one of the reasons that we tend to underestimate Satan is because as Christians, we understand that he is defeated. The Bible tells us as much. The writer of Hebrews tells us in chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, that therefore the children share in flesh and blood. He himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. Revelation tells us that when Christ ascended, that a great war took place. In Revelation chapter 12, beginning in verse 7, there John records that a great war arose in heaven. Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, the ancient serpent who is called the devil, and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. That tells us there that the enemy has been defeated. But John goes on in Revelation 12:12 and says this, therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. And if you've seen that, that tells us that Satan has been defeated, but he still lives. And he's furious, and he understands that his time is short. And one of the most dangerous times for a soldier or any kind of fighter is when the enemy knows they are defeated. Still they live, and they refuse to quit. You'll recall several years ago when President Bush declared that the war in Iraq was over. Well, was it over? Technically, the war was over. Saddam and his armies had been fought back. The war was officially over. But we know now that more people died after the ending of the war than during the war itself. And the reason was because the enemy still lives. They aren't going to give up easily. Well, the dark lord, Satan, may have been finished in heaven, but he had no intention of slinking away into some dark corner. His intention is still to wreak as much havoc on earth as he can possibly manage. The devil hates Christians. He hates us. But maybe more accurately, he hates Christ, and he wants to hurt Christ. And since Christians belong to Jesus, maybe the best way of going about doing that is to hurt us. But that being said, Satan does have a problem. Now, in the film version of The Lord of the Rings, the Dark Lord is symbolized by an all-seeing eye, and it is painted as being virtually unstoppable. That Dark Lord in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings had very few, if any, limitations. However, Satan has one significant limitation. John tells us in 1 John chapter 5, verse 18, that we know that everyone who has been born of God does not keep on sinning. But he who is born of God protects him, and the evil one does not touch him. James would go on to say in James chapter 4, verse 7, to submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. So maybe I'm contradicting myself a little bit. I've told you that Satan is a very dangerous enemy, And now I'm saying that Satan can't touch you. And that doesn't necessarily make any sense, but it does if we look at these verses closely, because they both say pretty much the same thing. James says, "Submit yourselves therefore to God and resist the devil, and he will flee from you." And you'll notice that your assurance there in driving off Satan is based on our submission to God. If you submit yourselves to God, then you can resist the devil, and he can't stand before you. The same is true there in 1 John 5:18. We know that everyone who has been born of God does not keep on sinning, but he who was born of God protects him, and the evil one does not touch him. Once again, we're talking about a person who submits to God, the person who has made up their mind not to give a place to sin in their lives. I believe that's why Paul tells us in Ephesians 4, 26 and 27 to be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger and give no opportunity to the devil. That is one of the ways in which Satan can really get a hold of us, for example, is if we don't control our anger. If we go to bed angry, if we nurse that anger, if we wallow in it, if we rejoice in how right we are and how wrong the other person was. That's the sort of thing that I believe Satan loves, because he knows that he can use it against you to tear you down and to destroy your relationship with God. I once had a terrible argument with a very close friend, and that friend said some things that hurt me badly, and I can't really even tell you necessarily what we were fighting over, but what I do know is I was so right, and he was so wrong. And I found myself replaying that argument in my mind over and over and over, and recalling exactly that, how right I was, how wrong they had been. And it felt good. And that does feel good. And you all have probably had a similar experience than that. Well, I believe that Satan was having a field day. But then eventually, God comes knocking on my door, and he reminds me what I'm doing there is wrong, and that it can destroy me and everything that I stood for. And I needed to repent of that evil that I had allowed to take hold of my heart. Now, I mean, the other person was still wrong, but I needed to repent. And when you sin in your anger, that's when Satan gains a foothold in your life. But if you can submit yourself to God, you learn to forgive those who have offended you. Satan has no choice then but to flee from you because you've resisted him by obeying God. And so just a quick review. You have an enemy. He wants to destroy you. But he can't touch you. As long as you are obedient to God, as long as you are walking beside your Father, as long as you are aware of his tricks and designs for your soul. Again, in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, he tells us there to be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Peter's telling us there to be self-controlled and be alert. Pay attention. Don't let your enemy get inside of you. Don't take your enemy lightly. Satan may be defeated, but Satan is still dangerous. And therefore, as Ephesians 6:13 tells us, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. Do everything that you can to beef up your Christian armor, so that when that time comes that you are faced with difficult decisions, when that time comes that you find your faith under attack, or when you find your heart so deeply troubled that you can't hardly stand it, then you'll be able to stand your ground. You'll be able to resist Satan. And one last thing we'll talk about here this morning. There is a bit of urban wisdom going around that says if you're clever enough, or if you are smart enough, or you're good enough, you can beat back Satan. You'll remember the old Charlie Daniels song, "The Devil Went Down to Georgia." Well, that story tells of the young man from Georgia who was challenged by the devil to a fiddle contest, and he wins that fiddle made of gold. And the devil didn't get a soul, right? Who won that? Well, Johnny won that. It's not necessarily how it works out. There's also some wisdom is that if you're pure of heart, that you can beat Satan. You know, in the Lord of the Rings, the movie there, we're kind of basing this sermon and maybe a couple more about that. They're able to overcome the Dark Lord because Frodo is pure-hearted and he is compassionate. He's able to hold off the temptation of the power that the ring represents. But I'm going to again let you in on a secret. That's not how it really works. When Christians attempt to take Satan on their own, it turns out more like the story of the young minister who was talking to his wife about her breaking her promise about buying a new dress. And she said, "It must have been the devil's fault," she murmured. "He tempted me." And he said, "Well, you could have said, 'Get behind me, Satan.'" And she said, "Oh, I did. And he told me it fit really well from the back as well." Well, the Bible teaches us that we cannot take Satan on by ourselves. Satan is far too clever for us. He's far too smart for us. He's truly too powerful for us, that we alone cannot beat Satan. In Jude, the 9th verse, it tells us there that when the archangel Michael, contending with the devil, was disputing about the body of Moses, he did not presume to pronounce a blasphemous judgment, but he said, "The Lord rebuke you." Even the archangel Michael didn't presume to take Satan on by himself. Even the highest of God's angels realized how formidable opponent Satan was. And you'll notice there how Michael answered Satan. He said, "The Lord rebuke you." Again, if we are going to beat Satan, we have to use those same big guns. We've got to use Christ. Because on your own, on my own, Satan will find a way to drag us down. Satan understands and knows our weaknesses. He knows our secret shames. He knows that past that we would just assume that no one ever discovered. He knows all of that, and he will use that against you. Scripture tells us that Satan is the accuser of the brethren. And in of ourselves, we are an easy target. Satan will find a way of reminding you of your past sins and using it to drag you down and causing you to become defeated and eventually filled with despair. And again, the only way that we will defeat Satan is to lean on Jesus. And that's the only way you'll ever defeat Satan, is to lean upon Jesus' mercy and forgiveness. Songwriter Don Francisco, and I'll close with this story here. He understood this, and he wrote these words describing just that struggle. And he said that sitting by my window on a rainy afternoon, everything inside my head was playing out of tune. I was thinking of the fool I'd made of me the night before. In front of God and everyone, I'd sinned and sinned some more. Well, I thought of the things I'd done. I winced at things I'd said. I wallowed in self-pity. I hung my weary head. And right when I was far down, that even up looked wrong, that's when Jesus gave to me the chorus of this song. And he said, "Satan the accuser has been whispering in your ear. You just tell him you've been forgiven. He's got no business here. Because it doesn't matter what you've done. It matters what you'll be. There is no condemnation when the Son has set you free." Aren't you all glad I didn't sing that? Well, this morning, the words of that song are true. There is no condemnation when the Son has set you free. But you have to accept the Son's terms. You have to come confessing His name, being baptized to be brought up as a new creature. And we encourage you, if you've not made that decision, to make that this morning as together we stand and we sing.